be.
Yeah! There it is! When those three little words happen, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're just sitting by the fire, relaxing as the snow falls outside the window. Ah, what a lovely time of year, spring. at least by me. Hey, whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. The patrons bring the show to you. Their generosity, their support, their belief in what we're doing here means we get to make more episodes. And in exchange, they get some cool perks, including ad-free episodes, video versions of the show, bonus content. You got your Feeling This. You got your DLC book club. You got your spoiler chats. You got your Let's Plays. You got your Wednesday paid DLC program. Oh, the extra show every single week with Lana Bashinsky joining Christian Spicer and myself for a wild and wacky good time talking with and about and for and among the patrons. Oh, it's great. You got to check it out at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the man they call the poor man's Henry Cavill, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
I will take that 9 days out of the week. You know, like that is A-okay. The poor man's Henry Cavill is still like the second hottest man on the planet, I think. Like that's thank you, Jeff. Finally a good intro. Yeah. Only took 11 years. Whew.
You're welcome. Very poor.
Unfortunately, you're my
poor, right? Very poor man.
Well, I was gonna say, unfortunately, you're my kryptonite, which is why if people are watching it and they can't see my muscles, it's because you weaken me, Jeff. You make me weaken my knees, actually. Just being around
that's
you.
The nicest thing you've ever said to me. So we're even Stevens. Hey, we got an awesome show for you. We're on the eve of GDC, but there's still lots to talk about. We got some interesting games that we have been playing. We got some interesting news, some rumors, some interesting stuff to get into. And, ladies and gentlemen, we have one of our favorite guests to do that with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, once again, DLC stands for Die, Live, Continue. Because from Spawn on Me, the home of the Spawnies, our friend Khalif Adams is back here. Hey, Khalif, how are you?
I'm so happy to be with y'all. It has been too long. I think it is now my 7,000th appearance on DLC.
I think that's true.
Which makes me extremely happy. And again, getting a chance to rock with y'all and see you both and hang out with the rest of the team and the rest of the crew. It always makes me happy. So excited to be
here. You're in the 7,000 timer club now.
Yeah, I think I have more assists than Wemby at this point. I think I'm doing all right. I think I'm doing okay.
We appreciate it. We love having you. You're right, it's too long. Before we even get into the show, I want to ask you about the Spawnies, because it just happened not too long ago. 2 weeks ago now?
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago. It was a little bit over, about 2 to 3 weeks ago now. Yeah, we had our third annual Spawnies event, our game awards show that we do every year, trying to spotlight underrepresented folks within the gaming space.
So awesome.
And man, it was so good. I have to give myself a pat on the back of how good it was.
Well, hey, I'll add to that because it is great. I feel like you've upped the production quality every single year, and you're just knocking it out of the park. So much fun to watch. Such great awards. Not your typical, you know, I can tell you the six games that are going to win everything. It's really much more interesting, much more nuanced than that. Kudos to you for putting it all together. It must be a ton of work.
Thank you. Yeah, this year was a really interesting one. It almost didn't happen this year because of multiple factors. I got laid off last year. It was a whole bunch of timing to kind of get everything together. But we had a really great showing. It was a 6 months kind of condensed version of the show, and it was our best effort so far. We have had almost over 300,000 people watch it, which was wild.
It's awesome
to see. And a lot of folks really enjoyed it. And I'm already getting the knock on the door to say, when is Spawnies 4 happening? And I was like, just leave me alone for a minute. Let me rest.
I need 11 months to rest.
I need time. But yeah, it's been great. People really have been digging it and watching it and loving on it. So thank you again for sharing that. And it's been great.
Absolutely. So, really, really cool stuff. All right. Let's jump in and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send anything you'd like us to know, comments, questions, suggestions, whatever.
When is Spawnies 4? Like, yeah, you can email that to.
We'll make up a date and we'll hold Khalif to it. That's dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But that's not the only way you can participate in the community, by heading over to our Discord as well, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Great folks hanging out, talking games and all sorts of other stuff there. Urge you to take part. But Khalif, you are a guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Ooh, we have a great bunch of stories in the docket this week, but the one that I want to talk about is the future of the PlayStation 5. The thing that we have all been not looking forward to just yet, which is now kind of getting some steam. We've heard some rumors about a PS5 Pro coming into the space, and it looks like our friend Tom Henderson over at Insider Gaming got the big scoop from one of the, verified leakers, which is a thing now. That people are saying is a so thing. We used to not be excited about.
Yeah, you didn't want your name to be a leaker. Meant that you wanted to remain anonymous. Now you're like, oh no, it's me. It's me. Yeah.
That's
old
what my family calls me every vacation. A verified
verified leaker.
Man, I'm so many comments.
What is the latrine smell so bad? It's the verified leaker. It's verified. Again.
It's got to pull over again. Oh,
I mean,
no.
It really depends on what you mean there. lots of conversations there. But yeah, we got some new confirmation on a leak about what the potential specs were going to be for the PS5 Pro. We're now at this kind of in-between moment within the gaming cycle. We used to have a really long hardware cycle. It was probably around 8 to 10 years, and now that has gotten truncated down to probably around 4 or 5 years now. So we're already kind of in that mid-gen refresh era of stuff. I mean, there were some great screenshots taken from some technical documents and some of the pieces that kind of came along with that were a bunch of teraflops, which is the thing that everybody cares about.
Yeah.
Mad flops. 16-point floating point calculations. Everybody likes their floating point calculations.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest kind of piece of that I definitely want to dig into with both of you is, we know bigger GPU, faster hardware, all of that kind of stuff. Are we ready for a mid-gen refresh on the PlayStation 5 after seeing some of the games that we've already gotten already within this generation? Do you think that we're kind of at that point where we're needing that hardware bump?
I think that's a phenomenal question. And, this generation has been so weird, launching as it did basically right in the middle of COVID, and having such a strange beginning and hitting all of those supply chain issues and people not being able to get consoles and consoles not being able to be manufactured. And it just has felt like such a strange cycle. And yeah, we haven't really had those, there's been so many cross-gen releases and we haven't really had those like, oh my gosh, this is the reason to get the PS5 above the PS4 thing. And now Sony's like, I will sell you another one. This one's even better. You mentioned all the flops. Supposedly, 3 times the speed is possible with this leaked version of PlayStation 5 Pro, including a 3x ray tracing performance, or in some cases, 4x, they claim. Although, what does that mean? I don't know. And supposedly they have their own version of something akin to NVIDIA's DLSS or AMD's FSR, a super resolution they're calling PSSR, which will upscale, they claim, to 8K resolution. So, Khalif, if you're ready to buy that 8K TV you've had your eye on, I guess now's the time.
I also feel like if you're going to label a thing a new technology that you are patenting, you have to remember what it's going to be truncated down to. And having your new technology be called the PISA seems a little weird. I think that that's a thing you might want to think about before you get that out into the press.
Let's maybe brainstorm that one more time. Let's just run that around the table one last time before we put that out to the public.
Maybe. Verified leaker. Yeah. Okay.
Verified leaker.
It all fits. It all fits.
About the PISA. also, supposedly, this holiday season, 2024 holiday. So, you know, evidently we're not getting a Switch 2, but we are getting a PS5 Pro this year. Christian, I did a poor job answering it. Maybe you have a better take than on Khalif's question about, are we ready for this thing? Is it smart for them to launch PS5 Pro?
I'm going to say something spicy first, and then I will answer that question. So far, this has been the worst console generation I can remember. Just the worst console generation. And reasons, explanations, whatever. But just from looking at what these consoles have provided so far in terms of exclusive games, I don't even mean games that are also on PC and on Xbox. Like, I'll count those as Xbox exclusives, like this gen, whatever. Exclusive games on the PS5, the things that we were promised and the things that we're getting, it has just been very lackluster. That's not to say there haven't been great games that I have played on those systems, but I don't think I needed those systems to play those great games. And it has just been a total, just kind of a breathy meh escaping your mouth is this console generation so far, in my opinion. So I don't think, to answer the question, I will answer the question. That's a spicy take. To answer the question, no, I don't think so, because we haven't seen enough games that prove the promise of what the PS5 or Xbox Series X are supposed to deliver. And some games, yes. Insomniac, I feel like, has knocked their games out of the park, and they've shown off those instant load times, and Ratchet and Clank felt incredible. There have been examples of it, but for the most part, no. And I now we're going to be in this part where if this thing is really that many flops more powerful than the current one, where you're creating this issue of, well, does it run on the old one? How good can it be on the new one? It really feels like a no, please.
Well, also the thing we've kind of gotten used to this generation for the first time is these settings of performance versus ray tracing versus quality versus whatever, you know. And I wonder, I don't know if these games will be patched or if will this thing just automatically make your performance mode look as good as the quality mode? Will the quality mode all of a sudden have the performance of the performance mode? How is that all going to work? Or will these games all need to get patched?
I mean, they're just going to have it on pisser mode. It'll just be that.
It's a real pisser. This is
it'll have those things.
You get Ben Affleck out there in his Boston accent. It's a real pisser.
A real pisser. But one of the questions that I asked on social was, besides the confusion that you're now going to have within the space for the consumer, where you now have the PS5 Slim, which is already a different form factor than the original PS5. And now you're going to have this other version of the PS5 that is going to be better than all of those combined. What does this do to the development community that has already seen a big hit in terms of layoffs and all of those conversations there? That they've already been trying to squeeze all the blood out of a rock to get the best stuff out of it already. How much does that actually add to, developer worry in that space too? How does that affect those conversations? And like you said, Christian, you know, most games that we've got in this generation, you don't really get to the really sexy stuff until the end of a generation anyway. That's been the way that games have traditionally kind of gone. And I'm with you on a lot of that conversation. I feel like there's been so much stuff that we haven't seen yet. You know, the original PlayStation had 8K on the box. Now this one's going to have 8K plus on the box. Yeah. What does that mean in a real way? So I'm a little bit confused by this. And then I'm dying to see how the messaging is going to come out of Sony for this. I don't know how you're going to get a marketing team to really push that forward in a way that's going to make sense to an already confused consumer base when it comes to different SKUs and what that's going to mean.
So and at what price?
Yeah.
Yep.
That too. That yep. too. And mm-hmm. and it, you know, I joked about it, but it is weird to have Nintendo be like, we can wait another year or, you know, another 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. And Sony's like, hey, remember the PS5 that you guys couldn't buy for months and months and months? We finally just got those into the chain. Let's update that thing and you buy a new one.
Yep.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I am always a proponent of newest, latest, best. I like the Ferrari model of just give me the fastest, most powerful thing. I want it. This case, I just don't know. I think it really does come down to the thing you guys have been talking about, which is software. Where's the software that makes me feel like, you know, Christian, you even mentioned all these Insomniac games, 90% of which are available on PlayStation 4, you know? It's there has not been that feeling of wow, the PS5 really has come into its own, and you know they're not alone there, right? I think the same is true for Xbox Series consoles. It's a very odd generation. It has straddled the line and it has not come out of a straddle. We're still straddled. It feels like, you know.
Yeah,
I mean looking at Final Fantasy VII Remake versus Rebirth. Remake on PlayStation 4, Rebirth not, but do they look that different? Do they play that different? What are the load times less? Slightly. Not completely. I don't know.
I wonder if GTA is a thing that is going to make this thing, like we get this hardware out first, because Sony has said in the whatever was their financial reporting, like no real established franchises from us. We are going to rely on third parties this year. Rockstar Take-Two still has a whatever it is, however many billions of dollars they're expecting in a fiscal quarter that gets close to the end of this year, beginning of next year, that people are kind of pegging that as GTA 6. So I could see that being, we're going to run this thing out. You're going to get this at whatever, 60 frames per second with ray tracing, all of this stuff on PS5 Pro. I think that could say a lot. But $700 or whatever the, you know, says a lot also. And yeah. I don't think Rockstar releases a version of Grand Theft Auto 6. Gosh, I could be wrong. But I don't think they release a version of it that runs poorly on this current gen that we're in. I don't think GTA 6 is going to be a cyberpunk situation where it can't run on PS4, on Xbox One. I'd have to guess that they need that game to be optimized across everything. So does the best, prettiest version of GTA do enough to move these units? Is just tech lust do enough to move these units? I just don't know.
Well, I think, you know, traditionally in the couple of cycles we've had where we've gotten this mid-generation update, you know, the pros, the PS4 Pro, for example, wasn't really a new console. It was like, yeah, it does all the PS4 stuff. It just does it a little faster, a little better, a little shinier. And I think I would be surprised if there's anything that would require a PS5 Pro in that same vein, right? It's not a new console so much as it is this refresh that just kind of squeezes a little bit of more juice out of these games that are already made for a specific spec, you know? But yeah. I could be wrong. Who knows?
We shall see. GTA 6 is going to be the thing. It
could. I mean, I think that's a pretty insightful comment, Christian. Yeah. Speaking of which, what is your story of the week?
Well, remember how we talked about Warner Brothers? I think it was last week, Jeff. And, you know, they like killing things over at Warner Brothers. Apparently, they also like actually releasing a couple of things before they kill it. Let's not kid ourselves. But Multiverses, which had launched in an alpha state, but they were selling stuff and all this baggage that went along with that first launch of Multiverses. It went dark. They have announced that it is now coming back as a 1.0 full release. It's been updated to Unreal Engine 5. They've made all these changes and tweaks, and it's the game you loved before if you loved it. But if you didn't love it before, we've changed it, so you'll love it now. The Smash Brothers-esque, all of these Warner Brothers characters, platform battler, whatever you'd like to call it, is coming out May 28th. I played, I think, Jeff, we both enjoyed our time with that alpha.
Yeah, I played actually a bunch of it with my son, who was really into it for a while.
I don't think either of us stuck with it. I don't think the stickiness was there. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, or Jeff or Khalif, but I feel like I would not trust Warner Brothers with my wallet right now in terms of this game lasting. Free to play. Well, they hope I don't play it for free.
It's true.
Yeah. I just don't. It feels like a precarious time for a big free to play season pass, invest in characters, invest in skins, buy into this library of stuff. Meanwhile, Warner Brothers is literally just killing stuff from your library.
I think most people are kind of unaware of that. You kind of have to be, I think, really watching the news to grok that Warner Brothers has been killing off stuff. I wonder how much that news will affect them. Maybe I'm, you know, giving short shrift to the average news watcher, but I feel like that's kind of inside baseball a bit that Warner Brothers has been. I don't know how many people know about, you know, Coyote versus Acme or any of that. I'm certainly upset about it, and we've talked about it on the show a lot. But I think this game looks really good. What they came out with was a new trailer that shows it off, some new characters. It's moved to Unreal Engine 5, so it's a little prettier. They say they have updated net code to make it more stable. They've shown off or described a PvE mode, because Multiverses is basically Super Smash Brothers. It's a big fighting game, big PvP fighting game. But this new release will have a PvE mode that allow you to unlock some new perks by just doing challenges, which sounds like a cool thing, I think. I like PvE modes personally. I think they're putting their best foot forward. I think the game looks really strong. The lineup of characters is awesome. They've got, you know, your DC superheroes, a bunch of really fun characters from across animated things and Game of Thrones. And like, there's a lot of popular stuff there. And I think Multiverses did pretty well in its open beta. I suspect this game will do pretty well. It's coming out May 28th. Which is, there's not much other stuff coming out then. Khalif, what do you think? You think Multiverses is gonna do well? You think they were smart to kind of go dark for a while and have a big re-debut?
It's a hard thing because on one hand, we all know that once you capture lightning in a bottle, you kind of have to keep that zeitgeist around the game to kind of grow the community and to continue to have that momentum happen. And they were in a really good spot in terms of when they first launched, because there weren't a ton of fighting games out at the moment. We hadn't had Street Fighter VI drop. We hadn't had Tekken 8 drop yet. Mortal Kombat 1 was still on the beginning of kind of being released. And, you know, Warner Brothers in that conversation is a whole other thing too. But the potential kind of introduction to the community could still work, because the one thing about the fighting game community is that they are very loyal in a lot of different ways. Fighting games have a long tail if they're decent, and Multiverses was a pretty good version of a Smash game with all of those IP, and a lot of folks are really digging it. I was at Evo last year, and it was a game that was being played by a bunch of people on side parts of the tournament. People were really excited about it. There was a lot of good energy there. I just don't know now if coming back with Unreal Engine 5 as being a feature. Netcode is a huge conversation within the fighting game community. If your netcode is trash and your game is dead on arrival, and hearing that netcode has gotten updated, that's going to be a good thing. I just don't know if that's going to pull enough people away from Tekken and Street Fighter right now, which are huge right now in terms of the space. So. Yeah. I think they might have missed their window to kind of stay relevant in that space, unless the Smash community really comes into it. The good thing about Multiverses was it was pulling in people from a lot of different games because those games weren't there yet. Now that those games are here, I don't foresee people spending a lot of time in it unless you're going to have that super casual game that you just kind of want to get some friends together. You want to kind of get younger folks who are not fighting game savvy yet into it. I just don't know if it's going to make that transition back into being a game that people care about. So
interesting.
We'll see. We'll see in a big way.
We will. I do think that you're right in pointing out that it may be catering to a younger demographic, but I don't know how, you know, that Smash Brothers is that, you know, the thing everybody wants, which is it appeals to literally everybody.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Multiverses is that, but it certainly wants to be, right? It wants to be, hey, you like Game of Thrones? You're not six, but you like Scooby-Doo? Maybe you are six. You like, you know, you like...
Hey, 10-year-old, you like the Red Wedding? Let's have a
yeah, exactly.
I mean, let's get you they probably do, to be honest. Those are the people who really love it. I'm really curious how it monetizes, and I think if the PvE is successful, that will go a long way. So much of what makes Fortnite this behemoth is that there's so even now it's a million times this, but even before there were so many other things to do in the game other than win. You know, you could just go in and look for landmarks and see your little XP tick up, and you were going to get something meaningful that then you could use in the game in a way that showed off your character, your personality in a fun way. And I'm the reason that Multiverses didn't really stick with me is that there wasn't a PvE in that first alpha version of the game, and the things in the battle pass weren't that alluring to me because it was weird colorways or some alternate thing of a costume or a banner, but it couldn't make me a better character, which is what keeps me coming back to single player Mortal Kombat. Is on that single player side of things, I am getting better gear and I'm upgrading my character and I'm becoming stronger. It doesn't carry over into the multiplayer, but Multiverses, you can't do that because then you don't have that balance. And so if this game is introducing new characters at a regular cadence, what does that do to the meta? How does that change the community around it? Something that Riot has done very well and a lot of MOBAs have handled well is the introduction of characters and adjusting the meta quickly. I know people are already writing their emails about the times they've messed it up. Yes, it gets messed up sometimes too. But that's an important part of that game, is keeping that alive and adding those new characters. And I'm curious what the churn or the funnel of new content will be like for Multiverses, because it's expensive and I think they need something to keep pulling people back in. A different genre, Halo Infinite, a very great, competent multiplayer game. Like, I had tons of fun with it when it came out, but all it was, quote unquote, was multiplayer Halo. They didn't have that churn, the content to keep people engaged in a meaningful way. And that's kind of my fear with this. And I'm very curious to see how Riot handles it, because they are also entering this free-to-play fighting space kind of soon, and Riot has shown an ability to dominate the genre when they show up. I mean, it is not Smash-like. It is more Street Fighter or Tekken-like, it seems, Riot's game, but I'm very curious if Warner Brothers can pull this off. Those are the, you know, questions dangling over Multiverses for me.
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out May 28th, which is not too far down the line, when Multiverses makes its big re-release or first release, 1.0 release. But before we get to my story of the week, we're going to take a quick break for a sponsor. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Factor. Christian Spicer, I'm not good at lunches. I'm not good at lunch. I don't do lunch well. I skip a lunch. I don't have time for a lunch. What am I supposed to do? Forage through the refrigerator, compose a lunch? I ain't got time for that. What do I do? Well, I tell you what I do.
How much time do you have? Because if you have 2 minutes, Jeff, you can lunch. You know what I'm talking about?
That's exactly right, Christian. I have discovered, actually, I didn't discover anything. My wife discovered this, filled our refrigerator with it. So when I forage for bits and pieces to cobble together into a lunch, what I actually find are Factor meals, delicious, ready-to-eat meals that are fresh,
never frozen, chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to go, as you said. 2 minutes. That's an amount of time even I can carve out for lunch. You have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. Christian, I know you have some favorite Factor meals.
I as a vegetarian, I think folks might be thinking like, oh, I don't know, you're just 2 minutes, you're microwaving vegetarian. Like, everybody has this image of like mushy vegetables in their head. Get those images out your head. I can tell you, as a vegetarian, Factor has been my go-to, not only for lunches, but also like everybody's gone and it's just my wife and I, and we're gonna like, what are we gonna
you
do
mean
for
like
dinner?
In the post-apocalypse?
And like, everybody's gone. Everybody's it's a dark gone. Day. But Factor still gets delivered on time. But it's just us. And we're like, what do we want to do for dinner? And we're like, we know exactly what we want to do for dinner. We want to have our Factor meals that are in there. And it's not like, oh, it's like, yes, this is what we want to eat. We're going to sit down. It's going to be delicious. It's going to be amazing. Also, I'm a big fan of their smoothies, Jeff. Big
oh, yeah?
Fan of the smoothies.
Yeah, they got smoothies. Great. They got pancakes. They got all kinds of midday bites, all kinds of stuff that you might not expect if you've heard us talk about Factor before. You said delicious, and I think that's the thing that was most surprising to me is how much I enjoyed them. They are really, really good. They're flexible, ready to work with your schedule. You can get as many or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. There's no prep. There's no mess. The Factor meals are ready to heat and eat. There's no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup. It's so awesome. You can sign up and save. Factor has done the math. It is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Head to factormeals.com/DLC50 and use code DLC50 to get 50% off. That's code DLC50 at factormeals.com/DLC50 to get 50% off. All right. My story of the week, I'm torn, but I think what I'd like to talk about is we've mentioned so many times over the last few weeks all of this tumult, all of these crate back and forth from Xbox fans and others about whether it's a smart idea for Microsoft to release their first party games on other consoles. And we've seen, a lot of, I think, consternation from some diehard Xbox fans, frustrated that Microsoft would even attempt that. We saw this entire podcast/press conference. It was a podcast, but it was in the form of a kind of a let's talk to people. We had the top Xbox brass sitting there, like reassuring everybody, laying it all out. Hey, it's going to be a game by game basis. We're not, this is what we've had this in the plan for a long time. We're not abandoning Xbox. All of this mishigas surrounding the idea of Microsoft putting these games out on other consoles. And now that it's actually happening, and we know it's happening, I think it's particularly interesting that this week the pre-release pre-order option for one of those multi-platform games, Sea of Thieves, a game that I think has become pretty synonymous with the Xbox platform. It's Rare, a first party that Microsoft acquired to much fanfare when it happened, and then they kind of didn't put out any big great games until Sea of Thieves, which kind of started slow, and it really was a snowball going down a mountain and has garnered a very loyal, enthusiastic fan base and has become a real decent-sized hit. Well, now it's coming to PlayStation and has hit PlayStation Store. And this week we saw that pre-order status for Sea of Thieves be the number one pre-ordered game in the store. That means it's outselling things like the Elden Ring DLC, Shadow of the Erdtree, outselling Dragon's Dogma 2, which is, a game coming out next week, had tons of buzz, people very excited about. Sea of Thieves, Xbox exclusive no longer, But it sounds like PS5 players, fans, really are excited about this. The premium edition of Sea of Thieves was at the top spot. And then the regular edition, I guess it's called Deluxe Edition. It's these editions. Premium, better than Deluxe is terrible. You don't want Deluxe. Whatever. A Deluxe Edition has its own entry, and it was, I think it was at number four. So a lot of people pre-ordering Sea of Thieves. And I wonder, Khalif, if this, in your view, proves Microsoft right or it reveals something about the industry in some way. A lot of people, I guess, have been waiting to play this, excited to play this.
I mean, I think it was a thing that if you'd really been paying attention to any of the scuttlebutt within the Xbox community of people being so upset about all of this stuff, and you seeing the back and forth between the Xbox and the ponies as the fans kind of talk about it, we all kind of saw that this was going to be a thing, and this is exactly what was probably going to happen. Is that if you put out a good game, a lot of people want to play a really good game that people have been potentially curious about, and getting a chance to then have it on a console that you can play, I'm sure. You know, Xbox fans who are the diehards are like, this is what we were worried about. And the folks who were on the Sony side were also definitely like, well, yeah, we had been kind of wanting this. I really wish that I was a fly on the wall of the Xbox brass now, because that conversation, like, I wonder if someone is kind of like, you know, doing the like, I told you so, right? You know, we know what we're doing here. Yeah. That part of the conversation. Right. It was pretty fascinating to see like the numbers be that high for a game that, to even with the community that has already kind of been embedded with it. I think I have kind of looked at this game as a lapsed game. This is a game that if you're already been embedded in that community, you're already been playing it for a long period of time. I do think that potentially one of the things that's really hard about games like this, when you have a big online community and you're trying to grow that, is if you are going to a space and moving a game from one place to another, you have to have that install base there to get people to actually care. Mm. So like if you're going to log in on day one and you're a PlayStation 5 player, oh, I'm sorry, PlayStation 5 Pro player, then you know that people are going to be there to play with, right? Even though there's cross play and all that kind of stuff. So I think that has a big a part to do with this too, is like when we see these games move over, do they already have that install base where people are constantly already in that ecosystem? And then you're getting on and being like, oh, I know this is going to happen. I think of a game like Predecessor that's happening right now. That's a MOBA, the basically former Paragon that was on PlayStation, which is now getting some rumblings in that space now. But that install base is really low. And there's not a lot of people playing it, even though it's going to move from platform to platform. So I think there's a lot of conversations there that are going to come up. But it is fascinating stuff to see that PlayStation players really wanted it.
Yeah, I think you're going to see that same thing that you pointed out when Final Fantasy 14 launches on Xbox, right? Mm-hmm. Xbox is going to benefit from that thing, where there's this established community, people have, you know, people that might not have a PC that's been able to play Final Fantasy 14 are now going to have this well-established MMO, lots of content, big community, lots of resources, lots of established ecosystems, you know, structures around it that make jumping into a game like that on a new platform easy friction free. I think it's going to be, I think they're going to benefit from that. So I think it's a great thing to point out. Quick correction. I said the premium edition was in number one spot. The standard edition was in fourth and the deluxe was in 10th, at least at one snapshot, according to this news article. So I didn't want to get that wrong, but Christian, what's your feeling about this? I mean, I think all of us, you and I both here were, kind of downplaying people's fears about what this might mean for Xbox. And I think Phil and crew were doing the same thing on the podcast. But do you think this changes at all your perspective on or reinforces it?
I think it reinforces it. They've had success like this before. Ori has launched across devices and sold well. This isn't every game. And I think, Khalif, I think you were kind of talking around or to another side of this game that makes it successful, that as a moving over to a new platform, having an established audience, that I kind of wanted to hit on a bit, And it's this idea that new PlayStation players coming into Sea of Thieves won't be at a disadvantage against day one Xbox player, because they won't have the best boat in the world and the best musket and a sword that kills you instantly and all that stuff. This game is really about the hang, the experience. You're having fun. Yeah, they might have better coordination on their boat and know how to harass people or give them a hard time. But other than that, you won't have stuff that looks as cool, but you can experience the game in that way that can still be really fun. Because a lot of times these games become, this type of game can become so popular, and then they try to bring in a new community, but they don't know the meta. You know, like all that stuff is important, or you're weak and you're just getting stomped all the time, and that's not fun. But Sea of Thieves doesn't suffer from that. It is a very welcoming game. So I think in that regard, it's really smart. I also wonder if more PlayStation players are going to own this game than Xbox players. I'm very curious how many Xbox players of Sea of Thieves own it versus Game Pass. Because it's a multiplayer. Like Sony also is like, yeah, buy this game because you also have to have PlayStation Plus to play it with people. Like they're going to get their money too. But I'm very curious about that. Like how many folks on the Xbox side of things are not Game Pass subscribers. And Phil said something just very on point on that podcast. It was like, look, we can either try to squeeze more money out of the people we have, or we can bring in new people to squeeze.
There's all these other squeezable people over here on this other platform.
We can squeeze the current people really hard, or we can just kind of like give little pinches to new people. They're giving new pinches.
Yeah. Prepare to get squeezed, Sony players. No, I think it's cool. And I think it's cool that people are as excited about this. You know, I think it's easy for me personally. I'll just speak for myself. It's easy for me personally to lose sight of, you know, because we're always kind of looking at what's next all the time. And I think it's easy to lose sight of the fact that people are looking up from the other side of the fence going, hey, this game has been out for a long time and people seem to have a lot of fun with it. I sure would like to play it. If I ever got the chance, I would. You know, I think that's kind of cool that these games that are still chugging along that have garnered this momentum from having so many updates, so much content, so much goodwill, so many things in their community that have built up, positive momentum, that it does carry over. And when they get brought to these new platforms, like I said, I think the same thing's going to happen with Final Fantasy 14 on Xbox. And I'm sure there are other examples of things that are coming up that we could point to. I think it's cool that Sea of Thieves is selling this well, even if it's not a game that I particularly have loved. Mm-hmm. But all right. Well, there you go. That's the story of the week. Let's get to the games that we have been playing in a segment we call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist. Khalif, what has been on your playlist lately?
Let me tell you something, brother. No, I'm just I know your favorite genre of entertainment, wrestling, is high on my list. WWE 2K24 has been getting a ridiculous amount of play in my house. It has been so good to finally bring Kaka Beware back to the wrestling ring for the third time. He is now embarking on his journey to become the champion again.
Oh my goodness.
While battling through many, many eras of WrestleMania and all the people therein. I've been having a blast with the game. It has been so much fun to be able to kind of go back and see how this community, which I think is one of the best, you know, UGC communities, user-generated content communities that we've ever seen in the game space, because they, as soon as that game goes live, there's a portal in which you can upload multiple versions of, you know, characters that you've seen over your lifetime and replicas of folks who may not have gotten into the game yet and you know, likenesses of yourself and all of those things. And like day one, there are so many characters to download if you wanted to like pull people in. So I'm like, literally before I was joining you all on the cast today, I was literally doing that. I was downloading, you know, WrestleMania arena from 1995. And then I was pulling in, you know, Arn Anderson, who's one of my favorite wrestlers from the Four Horsemen. And was trying to find a decent looking Ric Flair, which we'll talk a little bit about later. But the game is fantastic. They've done a really great job of updating the physics on the game. The lighting is really, really good. The character models are fantastic. But the real, like, you know, thing that's going to pull you in is the Road to WrestleMania showcase, which is literally 20 matches or so from all of the years of WrestleMania. So starting at like WrestleMania 1 and ending at last year's WrestleMania, you get the gamut of all these different matches that were these kind of seminal matches within those WrestleManias. But the coolest part about it, and I don't know if you gents have played it, but they intersperse the actual video gameplay with actual footage from those matches. So you're like,
that's awesome.
I've gotten a dude in the headlock, and you're like, all right, so you got to get this dude in the headlock and then put him in the corner. And when you put him in the corner, it changes from the video game to the actual moment in that match where that
that's
footage
awesome.
Pops in.
I didn't know that.
It's
so cool.
Super cool. Massive shout out to the folks who blur out logos, because they had to blur out so many different things. They're like,
and people other who, people that were there at some events.
Yeah, you're owner, like,
owners
I know
of the company
who,
that were there.
Owners of the company. Yeah. Like, it's funny because, you know, the beauty of the wrestling game is that people change companies over a long period of time. And if you're a big wrestling fan, you know who the folks are that are getting blurred out. So you're like looking at this guy over here and you're like, I know that's, you know, one of the best commentators on the planet, JR. And his barbecue sauce, thumbs up to his barbecue sauce. And you look at him and it's just like a body and a blurred face. It looks like an FBI.
Oh my God, his face has been blurred.
You know, it's like, what happened? He's going to the woodshed, brothers. I don't know. It's like his face is just blurred. But it's fantastic because it like really goes back and brings back so many different memories of like, oh, I remember that match when Ric Flair fought Shawn Michaels for the last time, and it was his retirement match. I remember that match, or the first time that the, you know, the first casket match that happened with the Undertaker, stuff like that. So they do a really good job of those pieces and really pulls all of those things in. And it's just such a fantastic game. 2K should get a lot of props because it's a game that you could really just kind of like let happen and not really think about and not really do the work to make it really cool every year. And every year they've made it extremely, extremely fun to play. So
I got to pay more attention to this series. I really haven't been on the bandwagon for it. As much of a closeted wrestling fan as I am and have been for my entire life, I've never really gotten into the 2K series. And I love this notion of incentivizing game moments by like unlocking the video footage of that moment. That's just a brilliant idea, but
so
kind of audacious too, because there's ways to do that that can feel real clunky and lame, you know, like FMV style, like, oh, it doesn't really mesh well, but you're saying it feels good.
Oh, it's fantastic because you're literally doing stuff. It's basically like you're working a match. So you're going through the process and you have basically a checklist and you're
that's
like, all
rad.
Right, you need to do this move here. You need to get this person at this part of the ring to this part. And then it just automatically, once you do the move, it switches to the FMV version of it, which is archival footage. It's real footage from the actual matches. And you're getting snippets of commentary sometimes from the people who were in those matches, which is super cool. So you're like, oh, what was it like to kind of be in this WrestleMania Stone Cold? And Stone Cold, they just have a part where he just talks to you about like some of that stuff. Yeah. It's really well done. It's one of the best things I've seen in the sports space in a long time.
Mechanically, how does it feel? I mean, I think wrestling games, in my experience, like I said, I have not been paying attention to the series for a long time, so I'm way out of date with my expectations. But I feel like I have often been frustrated on a purely mechanical basis with wrestling video games, just how button mashy and kind of rote they can feel. And I wonder what your take is on that angle.
It can be mashy, and it can be really technical if you want it to be. Like the beauty of it is you can really button mash your way through it and have a fun time. And if you're really playing someone who knows the kind of, you know, intricacies of, you know, what does it mean to use a strong grapple here versus a light grapple here? What happens when you want to turn a player around so you can do a back grapple here, or you know, put someone, you know, they have some really interesting mechanics where you can get a character and do basically like an in-between move, which is you're not doing like a full suplex, but you're like, I'm going to put him in a fireman's carry and then do something else. Mm. And you're like, oh, I don't want to drag this player to the ropes so I can do something to them on the ropes. Mm-hmm. So there's like all these small things of but it winds up being like most sports games now, there's a button for everything, and right. everything has a button, and that yeah. can be really complicated. You know, NBA 2K, I think, is a fantastic game that gets more complicated by the year. Wrestling has now kind of gotten into that space too, where it's trying to replicate the real thing while also being arcadey in a lot of different ways. Mm. So it is a really good balance between the two. But it is one of those things, like, if you want to get the best bang for your buck to really get all the moves out of your moveset, you want to pay attention to your kind of move card to see where where you can kind of do those things that you really want to do.
Right.
I find these games so fascinating in the sense that, you know, Khalif, you said sports games several yep. times so far when talking about it. And I think that I would probably also put it in that genre. Mm-hmm. But I find it interesting that these games haven't really broken into the fighting game community. You know, they're yeah. not talked about in that same way, but in many ways could be. I don't know if it's, you know, 2K not leaning into that community, and so much of it is the other stuff that it does in trying to give you that create a player experience that is more akin to FIFA or Madden or NBA 2K, which are decidedly sports games, even though mm-hmm. there's a lot of PvP in those games. No one would consider FIFA a fighting game, you know, a team fighting game or anything like that. But I think that the WWE games are really interesting, that I don't know if the fighting game community maybe hasn't really embraced them in a long time, or if there's stuff in the game that kind of pushes that community away a little bit.
There is, and it's the netcode. it's the thing that fighting players care about a lot. It's the netcode. Like the beauty of that game is, like, when I go into a Mortal Kombat fight, I have an expectation based on a couple of things. One, my own personal skill. To whatever my opponent is kind of using as a character. And then three, the thing that binds us together is the netcode. So, like, I know based on my connection that if I get a person who I know is playing on Wi-Fi at a ping that's higher than 100 milliseconds, that match is going to be stupid. Like, it's not going to be as fun for me. Mm. In a wrestling game like this, the thing that changes is, depending upon your control scheme, is there's two versions of it. There's the old school button mashy version to get out of a pin, or there's basically like a flick of the right stick and you get a meter that goes back and forth and you're trying to catch in between this green window. That changes depending upon how much damage you've had to you, and that gets smaller the more damage you've had to you or to your opponent. But that's also really tricky based on your netcode, right? Because that's like, if I think I hit that spot and I know I kind of did it in that space and it doesn't register, that as a player gets really frustrating. So me, I don't play this game online at all. I do want to play it to try it out to see if there's people who are, you know, like-minded in that way. But it's not a game that I would consider to be competitive in that way. You know, if I lose, I'm like, yeah, I lost, whatever, that's fine. You know, did I get my move off? Yeah, that felt great. But if I lose, I don't feel like that was an issue with skill. That really does feel like a thing that's based on your internet connection in the biggest way. So I think that could be the biggest reason why you don't see that translate over. And there isn't really a move competency thing that you have to worry about. So one of the best things about fighting games is, like, once you've learned your character, you know your character. You know the spacing that you need. You understand the footsies that you need to get your move off before another person is. You know how to block something. This is so much timing based that it doesn't really translate in that same way. But I agree with you. It would be really cool to see folks in the fighting game community do it on side pools and stuff like that. It would be really fun to see people play it. So it would be really cool.
Well, I've long pined for a full fighting game that just uses the WWE character licenses that, you mm-hmm. know, people like. It could be like Street Fighter, oops, all Zangiefs, you know? It could feel like that, right? It's just, you know?
It's, I mean, Midway tried it in the early 90s with the full motion video version of it. And I hate that game. That game is terrible. But it's fun.
They could do a good version. They could do a good version.
They could do a good version of it. And it would actually be really fun to see them try to go back to the well with new characters and kind of revamp that. Yeah. It would be really fun to see for sure.
Well, that's WWE 2K24, one of the things that is on Khalif's playlist. Last week, Christian and I talked a little bit about early impressions of Rise of the Ronin. I know you have also gotten early code for that game. What is your take on Sony's exclusive Rise of the Ronin?
Yeah, I'll keep it short and sweet because I know you all talked about it. But I've had a blast with it. It was a game that, you know, Ghost of Tsushima has been the samurai standard for that kind of genre right now. So I kind of went into it really, you know, just like, okay, what are you actually going to bring here? But knowing that Team Ninja was behind it, that kind of raised the level of expectation for it. I think this game needs to be on PS5 Pro because it's not as pretty as it needs to be. It needs some pisser in it.
Get that pisser in there.
It needs some pisser in there to get that together. But I do really like how intricate the combat is. Like, in an interesting way, I think they are nailing what Ghost of Tsushima was trying to do with the multiple styles and multiple stances and the multiple ways that you're using your weapons across the board that you find. That has been really fascinating because I've gone into fights and been like, all right, cool. I have an understanding of what I'm trying to do. I'm looking at the opponent that I'm going to face, and I can see based on the kind of UI of like, all right, if I move from this stance to this other stance, I have a better chance of kind of getting through their block and doing all this kind of stuff. So they do a really good job of teaching you what the kind of rock, paper, scissors is in that game, which I think is really smart. And the world itself is really stunning so far. Like, I think they've gotten that part down well. I don't know yet if the kind of dual combat with a partner works as well as I want it to, because the AI doesn't feel as smart as it needs to be. Because as soon as I'm like, all right, I'm fighting you over here, and my homeboy is over there. He's like, go get him.
Your homeboy's like, whenever you need me, I'm right here.
I'm just hanging out, buddy.
I'm standing back right here.
I'm not going to hit this dude until you just tell me to go.
Just give me the thumbs up anytime. Hey, and I'm over in the corner like, thumbs up, dude, thumbs up.
At least they're not the friend that starts the fight, then bails. Like, AI is not going to run in and punch the dude and then run away and be like, get him, Brad, get him.
You know, I'll tell you that story. My old stomping grounds in the Bronx is a good story about that. But yeah, like that part of it is a little bit weird and funky, which I think maybe that's the thing that you can patch through patches and, you know, up the AI to kind of be more coherent in that way. But I also think
like the game does support co-op, which I don't think we're supposed to talk about yet, but I think that's one of the ways I think you mitigate that is like, have an actual Brad, your actual friend Brad.
No, you don't want, you know. No, trust me. I have a lot of Brads as friends, and they are, you don't want Brad.
I do want to see how that plays into it, because I think that will make it a really interesting game, and that also makes it even more fascinating, because then it's a little bit different than the Dark Souls kind of recipe where you're going in and going and finding, you know, either inviting someone to kind of invade your world to help you. This person's kind of just with you for the session that you're in.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see when they get a chance to turn that switch on to see what that looks like. But so far, you know, it is passing expectations in terms of gameplay and story. I just wish it looked a little bit better. It doesn't look like what I would have an expectation for a PlayStation 5 game to look like right now, which is a little bit disappointing.
Yeah. There you go. Rise of the Ronin. A little early look at that game as well. Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist this week?
I feel like it's, you know, akin to WWE for you all. This guilty pleasure thing of your youth that you still love and pine to be great again, and more often than not isn't great in its current iterations. But man, it could
How
be.
How dare you? WWE is great right now. But go ahead. Sorry.
Well, maybe now, but a few months ago, it definitely was not. maybe they've gotten all that out of their closets. I question.
Well,
that,
I mean,
Jeff.
I'm talking about in front of the camera, not behind it. But yes, so.
tomato, my friend. So my Steam wish list got me. We did a paid DLC episode not too long ago about games that you don't even play. You know, you buy it and then it just sits there and you're like, well, how could I lose money by not spending money on this game? Well priced. I need to buy it. So my Steam wish list got me, and RoboCop Rogue City is on sale. It is the Steam spring sale, which I feel like these sales we don't talk about as much because it's kind of like these are the games that used to be like exciting. You check in every hour and sometimes you'd be like, oh my, that game's $1. And it's like, it is for 2 minutes and Steam crashes, you know, like you couldn't get it.
I think now, RoboCop is 40% off right now.
It is 40% off RoboCop Rogue City. It runs on Unreal Engine 5. I had had my eye on this game since it was announced. I love RoboCop. Maybe it's also the Helldivers 2 we've been playing. You know, I've just been in the battleship. I've been in the era, I guess, of satirical super violence. Man, I love RoboCop Rogue City. I'm still early hours in it, maybe 4 hours in. I'm dabbling in some of the side missions, dare I call them that. Some of them are like, you get a new mission on your HUD and it's just, you go talk to, it's like, oh, you follow this mission and you walk over there and the person's like, do you want to get a coffee? I do. And it's like, mission complete. And I'm like, I did it. But it is, I don't think it'll make you a fan of RoboCop. If you don't have any affinity for the character, for the franchise, I don't think this will be the thing that does it. But if you have an affinity for the character, even a passing, you know, love for this character and what the franchise represents, this game nails it. I mean, absolutely nails it in terms of the aesthetic of the, you know, made in the 80s, futuristic, dilapidated Detroit that's run by a corporation, and the police force is run by a corporation to serve their interests, and they've literally built a robot to do their bidding, but this robot still has a little bit of personality left that pull, and you know what's going to happen, right? But it just does it so well, and it has the original voice cast back. It looks phenomenal. Again, I'm playing on my beefy GP, but man, and it's just, it feels like an old Call of Duty campaign, and that I know what I'm doing. Like, I don't expect the last level to be any different than the second level, but I'm okay with that. I walk into the shooting gallery and I'm just like, I'm going to shoot all of you. you're going to pop out of a closet and I'm going to just blow you up. And you move slowly. There's not a dodge. There's not a crouch. There's none of that. You're just like this walking tank and you take a lot of damage. And yeah, I can like step out of the hallway and lean back for a little bit and then lean over again. But it's just coming in and kind of working your way through these environments that, again, evoke the film franchise so incredibly well. And you can like, you get perks for solving other crimes along the way. And it's just like, you know, you're in this drug lord's warehouse and you pick up like stolen wallet. I'm glad I found this. And it's like, it's just, you know, again, it's just silly. And it all plays into the atmosphere of what these games were doing again. And with a story that is super on point, better than RoboCop 2 or 3. And I think tells a very cool, interesting look at, you know, what society can be wrapped in hyperviolence, but also not glorifying it the way, what's his name? Same director did Starship and Robocop. Yes, Verhoeven. Thank you.
Like, it's a very good time to be a video game fan of Paul Verhoeven.
Yes.
We got Helldivers 2. We got RoboCop. They just need to, somebody needs to make the Basic Instinct video game. We'll be all rocking on all cylinders. Showgirls, I guess, or Total Recall.
I was very interested in this game, but I am truly blown away by it. Like, it had got good reviews. Again, I think it's not there's not going to be a level that flips the gameplay on its head. And I'm hoping it's not 30 hours long, because at some point I think it'll grow tired, but just getting in, going through these missions, playing as RoboCop, seeing it look beautiful, just tons and tons and tons of fun. It's a great B-movie game. My only nit for it would be it's not great on Steam Deck, and I would have loved to have this work well on Steam Deck. Just kind of pick up, shoot around for a little bit, put down. It runs, but the load times feel annoyingly long. I've had a couple of crashes, hard crashes on Steam Deck I haven't had on my desktop. But otherwise, man, a wholehearted recommendation for RoboCop Rogue City. I absolutely love it.
That's fun. How's the Unreal Engine 5 of it all? Is it
stunning?
It looked sharp in videos when they were promoting it.
It is stunning, and it's unfair to compare it to Rise of the Ronin because Rise of the Ronin is this big open world game, and RoboCop Rogue City is very much you're on a alley. it's like you're in this big city in Detroit. You're on an alley. They're rendering an alley, and then from that alley you go into a smaller room. But stunning. I mean, stuff is exploding. You pick up, you can pick up like CRT monitors and just chuck them at people. And when it does, it like explodes with electricity, like out of them. And they like, shake and fall over. And you can shoot fire extinguishers that spray and go, exploding barrels, all that stuff. Like it's a very beautiful looking AA game. I think this shows a lot of what Unreal Engine 5 can be and bring to something like this for a mid-tier budget style game. Like the animations, some of them aren't the greatest. Like a guy lifts his arm up and you can tell his t-shirt is part of his body, part of the skin of that wrapping kind of thing, and not the most bespoke. It's a
dystopian future. People have to fuse their t-shirts to their bodies. I don't know what your problem with that is. It's a comment on the t-shirt industrial complex.
Realism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it looks fantastic. And again, it's got all of the trappings, the score, the voice talent. I guess my only other nit would be that sometimes the pace of conversations is a little slow. Yeah. But I forgive that in the AA space of like, yeah, they're not Naughty Dog, getting everybody in the room to build these cutscenes. Like it's I let it slide. It's a hoot, man. Absolute hoot.
It's got Peter Weller, right? He's like voicing. Yeah, that's cool, man.
He's back.
How did the marketing team not go day one and sell it at a dollar? How do you not do that?
Yeah.
How do you not do that?
I'm just saying. Well, I bought it at way more than a dollar, so that's probably why they did it that way.
So that's $30 right now on Steam. So, if you're hearing this anywhere around the Steam sale, maybe
and I've heard it's great on console too. I don't think you need to wait for a PS5 Pro. I've heard it's great on console.
I'm playing it on Xbox, so yeah, it's pretty good.
Thank you for your cooperation. the game on my playlist this week is also kind of a weird throwy back weirdness. Way back in diggity diggity 1999, the old Wayback Machine. If you're an old like me, when you're you may have played a game called Outcast, although I didn't. I don't know how I missed this game. I didn't play it. I was around in 1999 playing video games. Did not play Outcast. No recollection of this game whatsoever. I looked it up on the old internets. Looked at video of it. I was like, I definitely did not play this game, nor was I even really aware of it, which is weird to me.
Did you, before you said this on the show, did you Google Jeff Cannata TRS?
Well, I wasn't doing TRS in 1999.
Review. Jeff Cannata review. So our audience doesn't find it. And they say you reviewed it and you loved it. Here's the newspaper clipping.
Yeah. If I spoke about this in 1999, it was in a medium that has not been archived on the interwebs.
Okay, good. We're safe. Good.
Yeah. I have no memory of this game. I mean, maybe I played it. I looked at screenshots. I was like, I do not recall this. But it looks 1999 AF, if you know what I mean. So anyway, the original team that made this game called Outcast got back together, evidently, and has made a new game called Outcast: A New Beginning. And I decided to check it out. I was like, this sounds like my kind of jam. It's third-person action game, open world, exploration is a major feature. And I guess the old 1999 game was kind of quote-unquote ahead of its time in that respect too, in that it was really kind of trying to do this open world exploration thing that really hadn't taken hold at that time quite yet. And so the spirit of this game is brought forward into Outcast: A New Beginning. They call it A New Beginning because you literally have to have zero recollection of Outcast to play Outcast: A New Beginning. In fact, even the main character has no recollection of the original game. The entire conceit of this sequel is that it's the same main character. He's got amnesia. He has no memory of anything that happened in the first game. And I think part of the fun of Outcast: A New Beginning is that the entire thing is tongue in cheek like that. I can't remember the name of the main character. I should
Cutter Slade.
Cutter Slade. Thank you. I was like, it's Cutter something. Cutter yep. Slade, which says all yep. you need to know about 1999. Yep. But yeah, it's the same guy, Cutter Slade, who is, imagine this game. If I had to describe Outcast: A New Beginning, I would say it is what if Just Cause and Stargate SG-1 had a baby and the main character was Bruce Campbell. Like, that's the world we're living in. He's like a wisecracking, jokey jokester who doesn't take anything seriously, who finds himself on an alien planet, can't remember anything about how he got there or what's going on, and eventually figures out that, oh, he's got to save the world, you know, Ash from Army of Darkness style. But he's kind of like irreverent and always jokey jokes. Like, all the dialogue, he's there's a lot of this game where you're talking to this alien culture, finding out about this alien culture, and just it is just rife with jokes. Some actually pretty decent, some kind of don't hit the mark. But, you know, I like a game that's just like, we're just going to be funny. We're just going to be some, you know, undermine ourselves and like, well, you're here to have a good time. And I think the main thing I would say about Outcast: A New Beginning is that it really wants you to have a good time. I don't think it's a complete home run, and I'm surprised that this game's initial price point is $60, because it feels like at like 40, like a Helldivers, you know, this would be a real solid recommend from me. And maybe, you know, next Steam sale or two Steam sales from now, it will be easy to recommend at $40 or $35 or whatever. I think the game is sharp looking. I think graphically it's pretty sharp. It's vibrant, pretty. I mean, it's kind of got some Avatar Pandora vibes to it, where the world is colorful. It's this alien world, and you're going around, you know, collecting resources. There's a couple of things that are really interesting about this game, and I evidently were so in 1999. One of which is, There's no leveling mechanic. It's a big open world, and you're fighting enemies and discovering things and solving kind of mini puzzles or like almost like traversal puzzles. But you don't get any XP. Everything you do is resource gathering, resource finding, resource acquiring. Bad guys explode into all kinds of resources. You gather resources in all kinds of different ways. You do quests that give you resources. And then you spend those on weapon upgrades and other kinds of upgrades. And it gives you these weapon mods that you can then swap in and swap out of your – you have two weapons. You have a gun and a rifle. And you can make them behave in wild different ways with the gun mods. And you can mix and match them and apply them to either gun at any time and swap them on the fly. If one gun runs out of ammo, you can just put the mods on the other gun. It's very free form in that way. And it lets you create all kinds of cool weapon characteristics, like, you know, spread shot, or when a bullet hits something, it drops a mine, or like all kinds of wacky things, which is fun. It's fun. And it reminds me, well, I'm burying the lead here, because the coolest thing about this game is that you have a jetpack. And the jetpack is central to everything else in the game. Like, you upgrade the jetpack, the jetpack can add new features. You can get a wingsuit. You can make the jetpack do all kinds of stuff. And basically, the best part of Outcast: A New Beginning is the traversal. And in that way, that's one of the reasons why I compare it to Just Cause. Because you are just flinging yourself around this map, you know, you're jetpacking here, you're jetpacking there, you're going underwater, above water, you're wingsuiting, it's goofy fun and blasting stuff. None of the combat, you know, especially in light of something like Helldivers 2, which I've been playing so much of lately, which just nails that, the feeling of a of a weapon, you know, the feeling of a weapon hitting a bug or a bad guy or an alien or a machine just feels so good. This game doesn't get that very well. It doesn't do that very well. And that's okay, because numbers are shooting off of the bad guys, and I like when numbers shoot off the bad guys. And the weapon mods are fun, but it doesn't feel super great. The traversal is fun, but it kind of like lacks one level of polish. Like I said, at $40, I'd be like, just jump into this game. It's fun. At $60, I'm like, it doesn't feel like it's got that polish that it needs to be a real yes, run out and buy it. There's a lot of fun stuff. I think the traversal puzzles are kind of neat. There's like cool exploration stuff. And I like the dialogue. You're talking to these aliens. You're figuring out, you're doing quests for these aliens. There's a lot of dialogue. You're not like role-playing game choosing dialogue options, but you're hearing fun banter, you know? And I think the world is vibrant and fun enough to exist in for a while. I think this game does a lot right. It does a lot that's fun. It's like a pure kind of silly fun that I am rooting for. It's just not quite easy enough to say, yes, hearty thumbs up, jump out and buy it at $60. Which is a bummer, because I think it feels kind of like a labor of love too. And a lot of the sensibilities carried over from the 90s, like, you know, the Bruce Campbell-esque main character. He's just kind of a, you know, it's kind of a throwback to an earlier time. But I thought it was fun. It's Outcast, A New Beginning. I was playing it on Steam.
Two really quick things. I was just looking at the website. One, they have a collector's edition for this, which is also really interesting that they have one.
I haven't seen that.
And also, best quote on a site for a game that most people probably haven't played, from Game Informer, they say potential to be a cult classic. And I was like, yeah, okay. So that's like a sideways thumbs. It's not even a thumbs up. It's like a somewhat sideways thumbs.
Well, I texted your family, Jeff, while you were talking, and they found your journal from 1999. And in it were thoughts about Steve Young being forced to retire from the 49ers and how you wish he had a couple more years in him.
Oh, yeah. I remember writing that.
The arm was still there.
Sure.
And then also how you really enjoyed this game from one of your favorite rap groups. So I feel like that had to have been Outkast.
That would be with a K.
It's your family reading your handwriting, so I don't know. They said, you know, they tried to decipher the old pencil the best they could, and that's what they Do you know what doesn't have numbers flying out of people when you shoot them? RoboCop. Do you know what it does have? Just glops of blood. Just blops. Yeah. No numbers, just blops.
I love numbers shooting out of things. When I shoot them, I want to see. I love that. I love it.
Some middle school or high school math teacher is going to find a way to make stand and deliver. What was the calculus? You know, they got numbers flying off of math problems in a way that's engaging. You know, that's the next step.
Yeah. I want somebody to mod Helldivers to add numbers shooting off, because I want to see the numbers. I like the numbers. Give me those numbers.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is Outcast New Beginning. It's what has been on my playlist. And that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Khalif Adams, it's always so much fun when you stop by. I got to let less time pass before we do this again, because you're the best and we love chatting with you. Thanks for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Again, I think the way to shorten that time is I need to bug you both to come on the spawn on me and come hang out.
Anytime.
That's the way we'll flip the script on that one. But yeah, thank you again for having me. As always, it's a blast to be here and getting a chance to talk to you about all the things we love in the video games and media space, as always.
Indeed. Tell folks where they can find out more and watch the shows that you put out and follow you online.
Yeah, we put out a show, Spawn and Me. We are, again, in our 10th year. We had our 500th episode some months ago, which is wild to say out loud. But yeah, you can check us out on all podcast platforms. We're currently putting all our video versions on Spotify, which is really, really fun. So you can check out the video versions of the show there. And you can check us out live, usually on Thursdays around 6:30 p.m. PST at twitch.tv/SpawnandMe. You can check out the live show before it hits the feeds. And check out all the goodness there. So thanks, everybody, for listening.
Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, if Khalif would announce Spawnies 4, he could be back on our show. Like, it's a pretty simple, you know, we don't ask a lot. We just ask for all of it. It's not that hard. This very show that you're listening to, if you want to find the video versions of it, segments, and if you are not a patron, no problem. We don't want anyone to feel financially stressed supporting this show. We put up video segments of this show on our YouTube, which is at DLC Pod. Those same segments also live on whatever Google happens to be calling their podcast player of choice at the moment. I think it's YouTube Music or something like that. You can find this show there. We're putting up those same episode segments as videos. We're also on Threads and Instagram as DLC Hype Train. And then I write a gaming newsletter called Let's Chat Games that you can subscribe to for free at christianspicer.substack.com. I always try to reply to everybody who replies back to me. I still owe some folks on those. I'm getting to them. I promise you that is on my agenda to do tomorrow. I always love the conversational two-way street of them where it's I'll say my reasoning and then everybody will let me know their thoughts on it. Super fun. So you can find that again at christianspicer.substack.com.
You can follow me on socials at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. Also, I have other shows for you to check out. The Film Cast is a show about movies and film, or movies and film. Yeah, movies and film. Movies and TV is what I meant to say. And that's available wherever you get podcasts. I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns, a sports show called The Fan Controlled Show. And I believe that's it. Oh, no, of course, the DLC Book Club is available on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/KanataJeff. So much fun talking about the fifth book of the Melazin Book of the Fallen. Oh, it's so good. It is so good. So check those out if you're so inclined. We love hearing from you here at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Khalif, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. One, go watch The Spawnies. It was a fantastic show. It's on YouTube. You can go check that out. You can look it up there. Just saying, The Spawnies. And also, if you're a wrestling fan, on Netflix, you can check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair 30 for 30 documentary, which was really, really great. One of the best, well-known, famous wrestlers of all time. He really put the sport on the map. And it was a really cool look at all the trials and travails and ups and downs of his career and his life. It's a melancholy story, but also a triumphant one, which is really, really cool. So check that out for sure.
Nature Boy 30 for 30. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
I'm coming at you with two this week. One, other people have already probably talked about. The first one, though, the NWSL season has started. In fact, we were recording this episode a few minutes later start time because I was coming literally right back home from Angel City's first game here in Los Angeles, which they lost.
National Western Sailors League?
National Women's Soccer League.
Oh, I was so close.
It's actually Nautical Western Sociopath Likeness. It doesn't even make sense. You just look at people and you're like, yeah, it's pretty fun though.
You dress as a cowboy and then you get on a boat and you try to sail it around.
And like really be a sociopath as you do it. It's compelling. It's compelling. National Women's Soccer League, they started their new season this weekend. Angel City lost their opener to expansion team Bay FC. Boo. They're a really good team. But the best part about the sport, aside from all the great things about the sport. This year, the Olympics, the Summer Olympics happen right in the middle. So folks that listen to this show enough know that I always like to give potential sports fans multiple opportunities to get on the bus. You can start at the beginning of the season, pick your team. You can be like Ka and pretend the Knicks are going to be good. You know, like you can get on that bandwagon at the beginning of the season, and then you can watch it never quite happen. But then the beauty of it is there's always another point where you can give up on the team that you started with. And you're like, moving on. I love the sport, but my team's clearly out, so I'm going to find a new team. Then you can get on that bandwagon because you still want to enjoy the sport. So this year, because of the Summer Olympics, there's like a month gap in the NWSL season. So you can pick your team, pick your home team, find a team that has a player from the national team that you like and root for them. And then halfway through the season, if they're not doing it for you, you come back from the Olympics and you pick a new team. It's beautiful. And you get to have all the fun. You get to have all the fun. I love it. We've been season ticket holders here since Angel City started, and it's awesome. It's just a great league. It's getting better every year. And go Angel City. The second one, this has been talked about more by other folks already, but I got the chance to see Dune 2 on IMAX, and it's just so beautiful. That's all. Like, don't watch it on, maybe watch it on a plane, and that's the only way you're going to watch it, but like, man, it is meant for a big ass screen with
and not
great
just,
sound.
Not just a, great sound, I was going to add. Is that rumbling chair in your chest, feel the sand in your lungs. Yeah. Get that good sound.
Just like the wings of the shit. It's like just the little subtleties. And it's a beautiful, beautiful film. It's Hans Zimmer too, right? Scored it.
So good.
It's very pretty. Sounds very pretty too. Dune 2. It's good. Who knew?
Dune 2. My parting gift is a show I may have talked about in previous seasons. I love this show. It has just hit season 3, which I think is now on Netflix. It started as a different streaming. I can't follow these things. Just search for it. Girls 5 Eva. I'm going to be famous 5 Eva because 4 Eva is too short, is how their song goes. This is the a sitcom that feels to me as much like a spiritual successor to 30 Rock as we have these days. A lot of the same creative team. Tina Fey is a executive producer, but a lot of like writers and people that you saw in bit parts on 30 Rock show up in the show. And it's the story of a women's pop group from the 90s that are now all, middle-aged, late middle-aged in some cases. And they're, some of them have started families and they've kind of a different place in their life, but they reunite to take over the pop world once again. And it's just ridiculous. And in that same vein of 30 Rock, which was sort of like almost always kind of a cartoon, it lived in this weird pseudo reality where goofy things happen. And it's got that same kind of, comedic stylings where they'll like, I remember when we did that, and it'll shoot to the, cut to the flashback and back. I this show makes me laugh very much. I highly recommend Girls 5 Eva, which has started its third season just debuted in its entirety. We also got a listener suggested parting gift. This comes to us from Chris Nichols, who signed the email a DLC patron from Commerce, Texas. Chris writes into dlcfeedback@gmail.com and says, I recently discovered something so incredible that it seems illegal. Board Game Arena.
Oh, cool. I thought you were going to say, like, don't read this email then. Like, save him.
Yeah.
Don't out him
seems
like this.
Seems
oh,
illegal.
Got it. Yeah. It was 1999. And let's just say not all of us got back from that camping trip.
No, it's something so incredible it seems illegal. Just send $300 to this address.
And I have the winning lottery ticket, but I can't cash it. If you send me a check for $1,000.
You won a new iPhone. All you have to do is send me your home address and routing number for your bank account. Anyway, he says Board Game Arena. At BoardGameArena.com, there are many board games you can play for free with a free account with people all over the world who also want to play those board games. But for just $36 a year, for a year, you can get a premium account that gives you access to every game in their entire collection, worked out with many, many publishers to allow you to play so many great games. These aren't filler games either. I actually found a link on Board Game Geek that cross-references their ranked list of best games of all time, as voted by users, with the list of games available on Board Game Arena. And Chris also writes, puts a sampling of those games available at the $36 a year account tier. He put a pretty darn long list. I won't go through all of them, but some of the ones that he highlighted are Ticket to Ride, Pandemic, Just One, Azul, Wingspan, Castles of Burgundy. I'd also add Heat, Pedal to the Metal, which is a great game, Agricola, so many, Sushi Go Party, Love Letter, King of Tokyo, Feast for Odin, Seven Wonders, so many cool games, Puerto Rico. He says they claim they're trying to build interest in board games. Fans claim that the low overhead of digital implementations make it cheaper to keep the site running and the subscription so low. I honestly have no idea how they do it, and I don't care. But for the cost of one board game, you could play hundreds of them. That's such an incredible deal that I couldn't go without mentioning it. Also, since you could do custom matches on Board Game Arena as well, DLC Discord users could set up games to play together. I'm sorry if everybody in the DLC community already knows about this and I just haven't ever noticed, but I thought it would be worth the email to provide such a great tabletop resource to all. Have a great week. Thanks, Chris. Yes, I was aware of Board Game Arena. I love your enthusiasm about it. It's awesome. Very cool. Not my preferred way to play board games. I like the tactile sitting around a table nature of it. But what a cool way to experience a lot of these games, to test them out, to decide whether you might want to purchase the physical edition, whether you want to, you know, just kind of experience the systems in a game. And as you said, there are hundreds of them. So it's a really cool way to drink from the fire hose about board games. Thank you for writing in about that. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you do that. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Khalif Adams and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get swag for the show by visiting store.dlcpod.com. Great place to get hats and mugs and anything else you might want to enrich your life. Our biggest thanks always are reserved for our patrons who make this show possible. Thank you, patrons, for supporting us. Our Hype Train patrons, our top-tier patrons, become video games. We got to tell you about these incredible games, these Blast from the Past games. We talked a lot about some Blast from the Past ideas this week in our What We've Been Playing segment. And, man, the Jonathan Putney game. You know, the early sports games, you know, the first Tiger Woods golf, it does not compare to Putney. You know what I'm saying?
I used to be a sports game player like you, but then I took an arrow in the Putney, and
it was you know, What the Golf is a game that everybody's like, oh wow, what a wacky fun idea. No. You know who was doing that? Doing wacky fun golf? Jonathan Putney. Yeah. Choose your club. I choose the femur.
I mean, graphic, right? Like, let's not shy away. Like, this was, I remember the congressional hearings about it, you know, sure, just ripping off body. Like, a lot of golf, yeah, games, you know, you like the Mario game, sometimes you can only bring a few select clubs with you.
Yeah.
And you take them out on the course, so that limits your play style. And then they had like the PGA games where you have like an actual bag of clubs that you're using. Yeah. Jonathan Putney, I mean, before you could play golf, you were just dismembering bodies it was to get your clubs.
In the era right after Mortal Kombat, and somebody must have said, what if we mix Mortal Kombat with Tiger Woods golf? And Jonathan Putney is what happened. It is, you know, you finish him before you start is the odd revelation in that game, you know?
We praise a lot of modern indie games for combining these two, you know, successful genres and making their own game out of it. Dome Keeper. Sure. There's been a bunch we've talked about.
Yeah.
Jonathan Putney was the harbinger of that. You know, it was this plus that makes for this incredible gameplay experience. And the best part is my parents would walk in and they'd be like, oh my God, what are you doing? And then I'd be like, what? I'm playing golf. Just and they'd golf. Be like, oh,
it's just golf.
Just golf.
And they're like, oh, I can't. I just watched a man with some plaid pants reach you into another man's spine and rip out some bones, gore gushing, blood splattering. But then he made a nice 30-foot putt. It was beautiful.
They were like, I could see John Daly doing that. That is a golf game. You're right. That is. And I'm like, it's not a golf game, Mom and Dad. It's Jonathan Putney, TM. Okay.
TM. Thank you. And thank you for purchasing it for me because they wouldn't sell it to a minor.
What was EA's, like, it's in the game, I think was their tagline. I remember Jonathan Putney was like, it's no longer in the body. It didn't roll off the tongue the same way, but
it's innards the game.
Graphic game.
Another game. Actually, you know what? We talk a lot about games. You know what we haven't talked enough about, Christian, is game systems. Old, forgotten game systems.
This is so stupid. Go ahead.
Remember the Mitchell Ness?
Dude, I just remember my friend down the street really was begging his parents for an NES, and they were like, we have a NES. And
the Mitchell Ness.
They had the Mitchell Ness. And it was like, yeah, but
what does the N stand for? Not.
What I will say about the Mitchell Ness is that it had one extra S. Like we talked about the extra teraflops that the PS5 Pro is maybe going to have. And for whatever reason, it just didn't get its marketing right. But like NES only had one S. The Mitchell Ness, two S's. Like, well, it was a superior console.
Honestly, I think Nintendo ripped them off because they added another S. They just added it at the beginning. SNES? Does that make any sense at all? No, it does not. SNES? No, you put the S at the end. NES.
Now that you say it, I do. I do think that that was how they had to counter, because how else? Like, if you're looking at the box, right? And it's like, well, even Sega, only one S.
Yeah.
Sega. Genesis. Okay, two S's. Master System. Okay, also two S's, but not next to each other, right? What I'm saying is, when you're looking at the box, are there letters next to each other in the name of the console? That's the same letter.
That was how I based my buying decisions.
There was no other way to do it. There was literally no other way. How else
Mitchell's named entertainment system, super.
Because back then, people might not remember, back then, the front of a box, and even the back of the box, didn't have the game's graphics on it. It had artist's renderings of what these in-game moments would look like. And so you couldn't compare back a box, like, oh, this console has better graphics than this console. It was like, are there, how many consonants, how many same consonants are together in the name of this console?
I think the only reason that we don't still talk about the Mitchell Ness to this day is because it launched with only one game, and that was Jonathan Putney.
Graphic game, by the way.
I mean, it was very, very intense for everybody. It was very odd. And the fact that it launched with that weird gimmick controller of the bloody femur.
But brilliant packaging, because a lot of times the games are pack-in games. But for Jonathan Putney, you had to reach in and rip it out to get it.
That's right.
And there was like that blood pouch that just happened as you pulled the game out.
But so many great Christmas morning videos that people got.
You got me a Mitchell Ness.
It was the guar of Christmas home videos. Anyway, those are some great memories that we have of games. And they made possible entirely by our Hype Train patrons. Thank you for supporting us at such a huge level, high level. We are very grateful. If you'd like to have your name turned into a video game or video game system, become a Hype Train patron at patreon.com patreon.com/DLCpod. All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.